A continuación escucharemos la segunda parte del reporte preparado por Fernando Velázquez sobre el virus de la influenza humana H1N1, antes conocido como gripe porcina.
En la medida en que más países se unen al coro de la Organización Mundial de la Salud, que presagia una posible pandemia mundial de la gripe porcina, activistas, investigadores e intelectuales cuestionan la historia oficial. Jean-Jacques recuerda que hace un par de meses la compañía Baxter anunció que accidentalmente había inyectado unas ardillas rayadas con el virus de la influenza humana y con el virus de la gripe asiática. También dijeron que habían matado los animales y eliminado los cadáveres. Josh dice que es difícil creer que se cometan ese tipo de accidentes en un laboratorio. Agrega que él cree que de allí proviene la mutación de cepas de influenza que apareció recientemente. Josh dice que el nuevo virus parece ser letal para algunos grupos raciales, algo que ha sido buscado.
And that's it for... Looks like Hafaz Modizada, or at least that's how it's described here. Maybe I'm something else. No, I think it's the Informativo. And unfortunately, that our time is up for that. But hey, tune in tomorrow. I believe it's a daily feature. Or else contact Free Radio and ask your local broadcaster to try to put it on in a more timely manner, because it's now time for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned.
The hallway. No problem. For only one reason. That president raises the question. Who wants a plan? The homeless. Our problem. For only one reason. A president raises the question. Who wants a plan? Who?
And that was, of course, an old staple of this show, Land by 15, Who Owns the Land is the longer way to describe the song. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM is what you're listening to. We're also streaming at freakradio.org. Call-in number here is 427-3772, off-air number 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And the studio, the voicemail for the entire collective is, in case you want a public service announcement or you have questions that pertain to other shows or pertain to the station generally, it's 427-4523, 427-4523. All of this, of course, in the beautiful area code 831. You can also go to www.freakradio.org, where we stream from, to get an application or more information and also check out some archives. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show upcoming is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And we had slated for this afternoon a long and interesting interview. Actually, I don't know how long it was going to be, but it sounded like it was going to be interesting with Sarah Barnes, who was an attorney with, I think it's called the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights up in San Francisco. It was one of the three legal groups, and I may have the name slightly wrong. She was going to correct me and guide me through all this. One of the three legal groups that actually successfully won $2.3 million from the city of Fresno on behalf of homeless people after Fresno continued its Santa Cruz-like, I should say, Ranger John Wallace-like policies of seizing and destroying homeless property rather than storing it, which, of course, violates both state law and the federal constitution, probably the state constitution as well. Interestingly enough, there was a meeting last night at the police station about parks issues, the so-called parks unit, which Wallace, John Wallace, got donated to him as police backup a couple years ago in the $750,000 kickback to the Parks and Rec Department. Let's be less inflammatory. It was essentially an appropriation for them to engage in all kinds of superfluous and, in my mind, discriminatory policing of the Poganip and other areas, which Wallace has gotten an extremely clear and bad record for doing. And there was an interesting discussion last night. Well, I don't know how interesting it was, actually. Again, it was a discussion described in the front page of today's Urinal, which is my way of describing the newspaper you find on the racks every morning for 75 cents, the Santa Cruz Sentinel. The Urinal came up with a story about John Wallace and all the cops who were describing all the terrors of the park and so forth, and the troubles in the park. And actually, HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, we were interested in, I was interested in seeing somebody get to that meeting, but we actually had a lot on our plate at the last meeting, which we hold every Wednesday morning. Come on down, 9:30 in the morning at the Sub Rosa Cafe. Everybody's welcome. Free coffee if we get it together. We usually do. This last time we didn't have much in the way of free coffee, but we had interesting conversations and discussions there anyway, and some plotting and planning and scheming. But in any case, Sarah Barnes was due to speak at 6:30, and this attorney, who really has had a lot of interesting pieces of advice for us down here, has been interested in putting in some time to help us deal with criminalization of the poor. I regret to tell you that I was told this afternoon that she was laid off along with a third of the law office that she works with. So that cuts back her livelihood, our legal resources, support for the homeless everywhere, and not to mention other people. Although it's hard to cry for lawyers who have usually a significant higher level of income than most people, but lawyers spend their time trying to help poor people. I do have some sympathy for, and so sorry to announce she will not be on the air. I'll talk about her contribution in terms of the suggestions she's made to me by phone. And she spent a certain amount of time on the phone with me, a couple hours now, talking about the Santa Cruz situation, possibly later in the show. Instead, I'm also kind of waiting for a call-in from Donna Dice. Donna's an elderly, that's kind of a cranky word. I guess I'm elderly too, but she's a 61-year-old disabled woman who had her arm broken by Sergeant Christian Lamaze way back in, about a year ago now, out at Three Trees Lot, the lot next to the Lighthouse Field area, as part of the cleanup program that the police department and parks departments, both county, I guess both state and city, I don't know about the county, were kind of conducting out there. At least that's my analysis. And they really screwed up with her. They sent in Sergeant Lamas, who demanded she talk with him, and she said, I don't have to talk to you. Who are you? And he, according to her, did not properly identify himself. She went to her van. He spun her around, snapped her arm, threw her to the ground, broke her arm, and then handcuffed her and kept her on the ground for anywhere between 15 minutes and half an hour, I think, was what the initial report was. I was not present, but certainly kept her handcuffed with a broken arm. Eventually, what was she charged with? Resisting arrest. Arrest for what? Well, there was initially, they smelled marijuana in the air. She is now a medical marijuana patient. I don't know if she had a card at the time, but she used medical marijuana for different conditions. A lot of people can't afford cards at different points because it costs $100 to $150 to get a card, although I used to hear they had some more low-income approach here in Santa Cruz, some sympathetic doctor over at Emmeline, but I haven't heard that's continued. Anyway, Dice is due to go on trial a week from Monday. I believe it's the 18th. Someone had previously mentioned it was the week of the 11th. That's next week. But no, it is the 18th, and I believe that's when the jury will be selected, and I believe it's I think it's changing departments. Her last name is Dice, not like in the rolling dice, but like in the D-I-S-S Dice. Kind of a, not sure, is that German? It's Scandinavian. I don't know what kind of a spelling that is, but that's the spelling of her name. And that'll be happening in the week of the 18th. Also coming up next week is my trial. I'm going to be tried at 1:30 on Friday in Department 1 for the crime of allegedly trespassing at the Metro Transit Center. That is to say, refusing to leave a business when asked to do so. And I've discussed this at some length on Free Radio. I've actually played the entire audio tape of the issue, including my discussions with the security guard, Donnie, as he's actually known in the police records. He gave me misinformation as to exactly what his name was, but who knows? Maybe he misheard me or preferred not to be quoted too accurately. In any case, I actually have an attorney defending me. We've done a lot of discovery on that case, which means that we've sought a lot of evidence from the city attorney, John Barisone, who has finally coughed up some of it. The police department offered evidence, but I didn't go down to pick it up because every time I go into the police department with a tape recorder in my hand, they refuse to serve me, and I don't believe that's a good thing not to have a tape recorder with you to document what goes on. I know you think, what, are you paranoid? You're afraid they're going to attack you? No, I'm not afraid they're going to attack me. But, I think it's important that public officials, police officials as well as other people who serve in a public capacity, who serve on your taxpayer dollar, who supposedly protect and secure you, be accountable for what they do. And there's nothing more clear about accountability than having a recorded record of what goes on, either audio or video. In fact, the police do that. You walk into the lobby, they've got a recording of you, so why can't you do the same? And they have refused repeatedly to serve me when I come in. So I just said, I'm not coming in for records, not going to waste my time. So I was able to pick up records instead from the city attorney's office. But I'm still demanding that he clarify exactly under what basis he is instructing or advising the, or has he advised the city police department that they have a perfect right to ignore the law, which is the Public Records Act and the court processes of discovery, and refuse to provide records if somebody's walking in with a tape recorder. And we'll see if he responds to that. It'd be interesting to hear what his response is. I've made the request several times that he clarify that, and he's been very silent on the issue. Anyway, that's going to be happening a week from tomorrow in Department 1 at 1:30. And it's a trial not with a jury, but with a judge. I believe it's Judge Ariadne Simons, who I'm not terribly hopeful about. She was a former DA, and I've heard a lot of bad things about her, and I haven't seen too much good. I mean, she's a nice enough person in some respects, although I don't really know her as a person. I've just seen her sitting on the bench, and I haven't been too hopeful about that. She seems to be kind of acting like the prosecuting attorney who's sitting in the judge's seat, which doesn't seem to me to be appropriate, and certainly doesn't help the defendants much. I don't think it really helps the community either, but apparently those who appoint such people either disagree or don't give a shit, so it's not clear. Instead of Sarah Barnes, I should say also there's another thing coming up on that same Friday, a week and a day from today. There will be a court hearing for Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, the couple who are charged with public nuisance for the crime of many sleeping tickets unattended to downtown from 2007, 2008, and a few from 2009. This is a deliberate attempt to avoid real trials, even though trials wouldn't be before a jury. They'd again be before a judge because these are infractions. And it's an attempt to essentially terrify, frighten off, and intimidate homeless people who are essentially saying, look, I have no place to sleep, so there's no point in my dealing with your tickets. I can't pay them. I haven't got the time to pay enough community service to do them. And frankly, I think people should be allowed to sleep at least somewhere. Not anywhere, not everywhere, but somewhere. And the city of Santa Cruz does not allow this. Hence, why should I have respect for, the sensibilities or the paranoia of merchants, police, and certain city officials who don't like the sight of homeless people sleeping downtown? It's pretty simple to me. Pretty obviously a form of harassment, and that's going to be happening at 9 o'clock in the morning. I believe it's Department 8. I could be wrong. It could be Department 7. I'm hoping to post a story on this on Santa Cruz Indie Media. That's indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, and you can probably find it there. Or you can give me a call at 423-HUFF for more information, more updated information. You can call on the studio line now if you have any comments you want to make or any news briefs. I'm also hoping to hear from Micah Posner. Micah is a People Power bike person who got a front page story yesterday because the police didn't like his King Street bike parade of some months back and wrote him a ticket for it, and the Sentinel picked it up. And it was, in my mind, it was a bogus ticket. You have the same people who are backing Chief Ranger John Wallace and the Poganip going after the bicyclists on King Street. It's kind of interesting. Captain Clark, who was the master of ceremonies, or at least one of the main speakers or main presenters at the police department's parks unit meeting last night from 6 to 8 that I said we've, some of us unfortunately, missed. We're having, you know, there's a similar attack, I think, going on to, again, show the power of the police department to enforce its agenda, its will, and its new right-wing militancy on the community. And hopefully we're going to successfully resist that, as we resisted their abuses and their attempt to seize public space at the drum circle. But I got to remind the community that mostly the police have been successful in shutting down 10 square blocks of area with the Coonerty parking lot panic law, which makes it illegal to even sit in your car and read a book inside a public parking lot or garage. They've been successful in tightening and making even more absurd and abusive the downtown ordinances so that there's even less space for people to legally sit down, peacefully spare change, street perform, or politically table downtown, and zero space near businesses for any of these activities in any other business district, which is really outrageous and clearly unconstitutional. And the minute some attorney actually decides to take such a case, I think it will fall big time. We'll see about that. So there's court cases coming up that might interest regular listeners to this show. I encourage you to check them out. Again, that's next Friday, 1:30, well, 9 o'clock for Miguel de Leon and Anna Richardson, and 1:30 for Robert Norris. That's me. Take it. And then next, the Monday after that, for Donna Dice, D-I-S-S. There is also, what I'm going to play now is part two of a tape that I made of Vernon Rodriguez, who's a Santa Cruzan, one of the Republican National Convention 9, that is to say, one of 9 people who were arrested actually prior to, almost at the beginning of the Republican National Convention, and then forced to keep coming back again and again for court appearances. Some of them still held in jail. I'm not sure if they still are right now. I played an earlier segment of this, and I've just discovered the second part of it, which I'm going to play now or very shortly. And I'm going to read a little bit before I do, there's an individual called Jesse James, who is involved with the RNC arrestees, or actually one of them. There's a story on Indy Bay, which I'm reading from, called Support Jesse James, Remember the RNC Arrestees. The RNC of 2008 is a fading past for most of the country, the anonymous writer writes, and much of import has happened since last fall. Just as there are many folks beginning their fight against the state for the happenings of last January, there are a number of friends still caught up in the web of oppression in Minnesota, which is where the Republican National Convention was held. This is just a reminder that folks in the Twin Cities and all over are still dealing with the aftermath of the RNC and an offering of sentiments from a local Bay Area community member who is fighting to come home. The RNC of 2008 is a fading... this repeats the same thing, sorry. The RNC 8 have had their terrorism enhancements dropped, but are left with potential jail time for conspiracy charges. Dave Mahoney is facing over 20 years in prison for 6 bogus felony charges, terrorist threats for pointing a finger. And local Santa Cruz citizen Jesse Forey, is still stuck living in Minneapolis awaiting trial. This is just a reminder that folks in the Twin Cities and all over are dealing with the aftermath. Jesse James Forey is a friend, a brother, a musician, an artist, writer, student, and teacher. He spends his time helping raise the children in his life, playing the banjo, taking and offering community classes, and volunteering his time to help create the healthy communities. Jesse, 27, was arrested at the RNC protests of last September at the Twin Cities and is fighting a felony charge, facing up to 5 years in jail. He is from Santa Cruz, California, and courageously waits to return to his home and family. He has hired a private attorney to help him through trial and needs all the support he can get. For more information, visit www.supportjessejames.wordpress.com and or rncaftermath.org. You can also, of course, go to the Santa Cruz Indy Media website, just Google for Jesse James, and you'll find this story, and you can go to those links. The following is taken from the supportjessejameswordpress.com and was written by Jesse earlier this year. And I think there's a picture of him on the website, too. What does it take to justify taking someone away from their friends and family? Justice? We have been told that our country is based on freedom and justice for all our whole lives, and yet, where are we? Our lives are so constricted that we have to forsake compassion for survival. In a time when people are being forced to occupy buildings illegally because homes are owned by banks, not the families within them, when youth and people of color are still being targeted and killed by the police, when thousands of workers are being stolen from their families, locked away for indiscriminate amounts of time without proper medical attention or basic rights because they are illegal, when community organizers are being charged with terrorism while someone who drives into a Planned Parenthood with intent to disrupt, damage, and injure is only charged with aggravated assault, it is clear that our culture's approach to justice is simply unhealthy. We are told that we are innocent until proven guilty, but are kept in jails or released on strict conditions until the state makes its case against us. I cannot help but feel sorrow when I talk about all of this. I want to believe in fairness and freedom and people, both strangers and friends alike. I want to believe in us, our ability to create a beautiful life, but there are things that I cannot ignore. I have been in the Twin Cities for 8 months now. 8 months. I had intended on being here for 1 week, but following my arrest in September, I have been forced to stay here until my case is closed. I have been found guilty of no crime. Yet I have been away from my home for so long, away from my 3-year-old friend Autumn, whom I have helped raise. How do I compensate for missing these months of her life? I cannot get them back, and I can only try to explain to her that I would be with her if I could. I was conditionally released from the Ramsey County Law Enforcement Center after 5 days in jail on $2,500 bail. The prosecution asked for $10,000, and the judge offered $7,500 or $2,500 with conditions. A bond was not available because I do not live in Minneapolis, nor do I have any immediate family in the area, and my financial means are very modest. Some friends gathered their money together, and I accepted their conditions. I was to check in weekly with Project Remand and could not leave the metropolitan area without permission. I have been given a place to stay with friends here, as well as the warm clothes needed to survive this, my first freezing winter, and all things considered, I've been getting by. But not a day, not a single day in the last 6 months have I not thought about the West Coast, my friends, and my family. The struggle inside of me to accept that I cannot be with them, the distance and sadness has made this one of the hardest times of my life. and I have done nothing wrong. I am not even accused of hurting anyone, yet my life has been irrevocably altered. Throughout this, I have thought about those whose lives are wrapped up in this criminal justice system, and my heart skips. It goes out to the families whose parents never come home at night, or whose unarmed son is shot to death in public by the police. It goes out to the woman who begged the judge to release the temporary restraining order on her husband so he could come home and help her take care of their two kids, only to be turned down because the case was still pending. My heart is broken in these past 8 months, but I choose to let it be broken open so that I can feel what is happening in this world. I cannot change much of what I see and hear. I cannot make correctional facilities humane or healthy. I cannot stop immigration or deportation. I cannot stop people being labeled as terrorists because they opened a community center. But I can treat people with respect and communicate honestly. I would be with you right now if I were from a wealthier family. I would have paid bail in full, hired a private attorney from the start, and gotten on with my case and my life. But instead, I am here in Minnesota, waiting. I am on trial call, a system in which I am put on a list and wait until it is my turn to go to trial. When my time comes, I get a call from my lawyer and have 2 hours to show up in court. Some folks have been on call for over a year. It's just not okay to put someone through that. The pressure of waiting for trial is really intense. There is a lot of anxiety. I cannot hold down a steady job because I may have to leave at any time. So I volunteer my time and work when I can get it, and I support others going through this with me. I have recently hired a private attorney without the immediate means to pay her. She seems really great and treats me with care and compassion. She already has pro bono cases and will accept whatever payments I can make. Together, I have faith that we can win in trial. I'm not supposed to discuss the specifics of my case, but I will say that I am not in as bad a shape as some. One RNC arrestee has been given additional charges, that's Republican National Convention, as he fights his case, four felonies to be exact, and was recently threatened with more if he didn't take the plea agreement offered to him. The judge in my case is Paulette Flynn, notorious for her high bail amounts and long jail sentences. She recently sentenced my friend to 60 days for a crime that a different judge gave another Republican National Convention arrestee only probation and a fine. I know that you two cannot individually change any of this, and that you two probably have dreams and wishes and pains that you would like to affect. It is my hope that we can share this with each other in a way that is enabling and inspiring. I suppose that is what this is about, sharing our lives in an inspiring way. Support. You can help me by contributing towards my legal costs, which has the dual effect of easing some of my mental and emotional weight through the lightening of my financial load and contributing to the healthy relationship between me and my lawyer. Simply by reading or listening to this, you're engaging in support through communication. Please talk about what I have said, what this has brought up for you, and share it with those around. There are things we cannot ignore, and there is much we have to gain. Though I have been isolated and intimidated, I am not giving up. I maintain my innocence and will fight for it just as I hope you would. Though I am being punished without being convicted of a crime, I am not punishing myself and am working to ease the troubles of others I meet. Though the state would have me be an outlaw, an outcast, I meet people face to face and treat them as I would my brother. Who we are is defined by how we act and react to the world, just as the world is defined by how we act. I choose one of health and compassion. Thank you. Sincerely yours, Jesse James Forey. And there's a list of things you can do for him. You can email Ramsey County Attorney Susan Gertner if you want. Be polite but firm in telling her you won't rest until she continues to pursue bogus charges or lets Jesse go home. And there's a phone number there. There's the rca@co.ramsey.mn.us. That's the a campaign. And it's a number of other email addresses. Again, you can get, you can go to the website supportjessejames.wordpress.com. Now, the reason I read all that is, because this is a distant case, although we are talking about a Santa Cruz person, even though I don't know a lot about the details, was I read some of the debate that followed in the comments. And here's a comment by another anonymous person. Don't throw rocks through bank windows. Okay, I just Googled this case, this is the comment, and from what I can tell, Jesse got busted with fellow Santa Cruzan Dustin Morales for breaking out windows, and Dustin admitted to it. He was with the group Crash the Convention and is charged with conspiracy to commit riot. What is the counter story? Sounds to me like they busted an anarchist for smashing windows. And there's another the response to that is Pretty Simple. That's the name of the guy who just wrote that last comment. His name is Pretty Simple on this. Usually get a lot of anonymous comments on IndieBay. I don't write anonymously, but most people do. Pretty Simple sounds pretty much like a simple cop, as she or he champions the guilt-till-proved-innocent lie that Foray is criticizing here, as if taking a plea is admitting guilt. Morales's coerced conviction is used to further the lie. Pretty Simple asserts that his or her dose of reality is if the playing field were fair on the streets and courts of Minneapolis or even on the boards of Indy Bay, the playing field is not fair, and that's why Indy Media exists. If we want apologies for state oppression, we'll watch television or read the newspaper. Pretty Simple is either a right-wing vigilante that's missing the point or a paid counterintelligence agent or cop surfing the net to spread misinformation. And the next comment is, please Google RNC aid and CRASS, C-R-A-S-S, to get the story about the over 800 peaceful protesters arrested and falsely charged with felonies for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Morales did not admit to breaking a window. He accepted a plea offer because the hundreds of falsely accused were being threatened with years for crimes they did not commit. He pled guilty to avoid the other false felony charges, charges that were dropped for hundreds of protesters, but his case was the first one up. Foray maintains his innocence, but risks years in jail. Hard call. The call the state would like us to make is to shut up and stay home. I was there. I saw it. I broke no laws, but saw hundreds of kids in black arrested for illegal assembly because they couldn't suddenly disappear, and conspiracy to riot because they planned legal and peaceful protests. If anarchists and other protesters are such a threat to your daily life, go observe one of these protests and see for yourself who conspires to riot. The police who spray tear gas and pepper and rubber bullets into crowds to make even peaceful and legal protesters get out of the way. I never saw this before, but do your homework about WTO and the Democratic National Convention. Our Constitution gives us the right to assemble, and we need to keep it. And then Pretty Simple responds. This is the original fellow who asked, what's this business, just breaking windows? The guy was, he pled to it, so, you know, isn't that a bunch of anarchists breaking windows and so forth? He says, my asking what is a conspiracy about what appears to be a rather transparent case makes me a cop, a right-wing vigilante, or a paid informant? Those are the only options? You sound pretty extreme, not to mention rigid. There are plenty of positions between mine and right-wing vigilante cop. You say it was a setup and the Morales copped a plea after being coerced, but when I read his support site, it doesn't seem to imply that anywhere. It more appears he took responsibility for breaking windows. Similar to this article, which claims Dustin, who pled guilty to breaking one window of a bank building in downtown St. Paul in a situation that neither endangered or harmed anyone, had two friends speak on his behalf, as well as more letters of support than his lawyer had ever seen in 21 years of practice. He spoke to the judge of his desire to accept responsibility for his actions and to move forward in his life, highlighting future college enrollment. That's according to rnc08report.org. Now, why am I a cop for asking what the conspiracy is? If Dustin went out there to make a statement, make a stand, got nailed and took responsibility for it, more power to him. I don't personally agree with the tactics, but to each their own. But I don't get the follow-up you seem to be employing. Now it's all a setup. It didn't happen. It's a conspiracy. You're saying he rolled over and lied, implicating himself. I say he manned up to what he did. And then I write on this website, Santa Cruz Vernon Rodriguez, and that's who we're about to hear, the first person arrested at the RNC last year, gave me an interview which I'll play on my show, and then I give the audio file site for listening to the first half of this interview. This is the second half, and you can judge yourself. Vernon apparently knew these folks and had some commentary on this whole situation. This is, we're talking about the case of Jesse James Foray, who is facing charges for felony charges for, it's conspiracy to commit terrorism. Let me go to the website and get the exact charges so we know what's cooking here. Let's see. There's a picture of him. There's a lot of stuff. There's something about his March 30th court date. I'm looking for the charges. And having a little trouble finding it. I'm going to keep looking. But it's four felonies, and one of them is conspiracy. Apparently the terrorism enhancements may have been dropped already. But here's Vernon Rodriguez, who himself was the first person, he said, if his account is accurate, arrested at the Republican National Convention, talking to me about a week ago.
Article which people can read and I think get some interesting insight into, as well as see a certain controversy. Jesse James, is that his real name, or is that the name is his pseudonym, or is that his nom de guerre, or what is
that? No, that is his real name. I was surprised to learn.
Minnesota, was that where Jesse James, the actual original Jesse James, was up in Minnesota?
I really don't know. I have no idea.
Well, get with it. Let's get some historical perspective, Mr. Anarchist Guy. Well, I'm sorry.
I prefer to be unidentified to political ideals, I guess.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yeah. Yeah, that'll work. That'll work.
Okay, so we are talking with Vernon Rodriguez, for those who just tuned in. He's a survivor of the RNC-9. He was the ninth, and he was originally charged with five felonies at the Republican National Convention, and then they were all dropped after he was forced to stay there for 6 months.
Yeah, 6 months.
And that, of course, took about $10,000 out of his rich father's estate. How did you raise the money? Tell us the numerous organizations, that the terrorist groups you got money from.
Federal Student Aid Department was a department I got all my funding from.
You ripped off our poor government for student aid in order to maintain your status as a would-be criminal who was really just pretending to be a criminal in order to subvert the process in Minnesota and waste the taxpayers' money.
Exactly. Me taking my case to trial wasted thousands and thousands of tax dollars.
Why didn't you just plead guilty? I mean, come on, get it together. I mean, I know it's something of a sacrifice, but still.
I know. I mean, 5 to 10 years in jail is nothing.
Well, you could have gotten probation, perhaps been an informant.
Exactly, exactly. If I just gave in early, I would have had a good deal, you know?
You could even help our forces fight the terrorists who are trying to destroy the very fabric of our nation.
I know. We have to look forward, not look back.
That's correct. Well put. And we have, dare I say it, let me coin a phrase, the audacity of hope. How about that?
Yeah.
All right. So, aside from all these tired jokes, there is some controversy on the Indie Bay website about, and we talked about this a little bit, about whether those who raise questions about the issue, and I raised the question to you when we first sat down before we began to talk on tape, you know, one individual did plead guilty. You apparently were the first guy arrested, but somebody else who was arrested, I think you gave me his name.
Well, Dustin Morales was the other person who was involved pled guilty.
And he pled guilty to what, throwing rocks through a window or something?
Yeah, throwing rocks at a bank. But
there was some discussion on the internet that, well, he did that because he wanted to avoid other worser charges, and we don't know that he was really guilty. And this person who suggests, you know, that it might have been okay for, you know, him to be plead guilty, it might have been appropriate for authorities to pursue him because of a criminal act he did. That person who made that suggestion is probably a right-wing vigilante or an undercover cop. What do you think of that controversy? In other words, here's a guy who pled guilty, and there are some people who then say he pled guilty. You know, he threw a rock through a window. He should take his punishment. What's the big deal?
I think it's good to have. A lot of people don't have this context of what has gone on through the process of trial, because when you're forced to go there and people were being spied on for a long time, and also the trauma that happened after that, because people were being shot in the face with tear gas and rubber bullets during the convention, and people were tortured in that jail. And so that in itself...
How were they tortured in jail?
Well, one person, Ellie Hughes, they were begging for food and making noise to get food in the jail because they didn't feed us for a couple of days. Varying people had different stories about what happened, but me, myself, I was not fed for... I fed once in 2 days, and I was denied medical treatment while I was there, even after being pepper sprayed, and I couldn't feel my hands for about 3 months after that, and wasn't allowed to sleep while I was there for more than 4 hours at a time.
Sounds like Santa Cruz.
Yeah, sounds like Santa Cruz.
Not the Santa Cruz jail, but the Santa Cruz sleeping van.
Yeah.
Outside.
Um, And so, I mean, a lot of people went through those kinds of things. That itself is personally traumatizing, and it's not something that you will forget, you know. And a lot of people throw that away as like, oh, well, you know, you deserve what you got, without even being found guilty of a crime. So I've had people here tell me, oh, well, you knew something bad was going to happen. You deserve to whatever happens to you. And I don't think that people deserve to be tortured. I don't think people deserve to be traumatized like that. And the person who was tortured, he was beaten into unconsciousness by about 15 cops who went into his cell. And
his name?
Elliot Hughes. And you could look him up on the internet. And he has some testimonial that you could find on the, you could look on the RNC 08 report, and you probably find something there.
Is he still being charged?
Pretty sure his charges got dropped. But
is he suing civilly for excessive force or for false imprisonment or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. A lot of us are filing lawsuits. And you can also go to the websites that I mentioned earlier, rnc08arrestees.wordpress.com, and we're filing civil lawsuits right now. So
you're one of them?
Yeah. If you want to get involved, I encourage anybody who even went there to file a lawsuit, because people are also suing, for example, for having their First Amendment rights infringed because they felt fearful for after going out to protest. And that in itself is a basis for filing a lawsuit if you felt intimidated while you were trying to express your First Amendment rights. Or if you were too scared to even go out again because of what happened. Let's say like you saw somebody get shot in the face with a rubber bullet and you were just too scared to go back the second day. That in itself is a basis for a case. So I encourage everybody to go and look up the civil litigation information on that website.
Interesting. Because I recall a much more local case. I'm actually going to trial on May 15th for a trespass at the Metro Transit Center, where a security guard and then police urged me to leave or told me to leave. When I didn't leave, they gave me a citation. And I felt essentially intimidated from going back there, even though in the course of my reporter's activities, such as I'm doing now, I'll be interviewing people on and around the Metro Center. Because they had earlier in that day been playing religious music, not religious music, religious sermons over the Metro loudspeakers on public money. And then they've been, you know, they had also apparently harassed certain homeless people who were there, or at least such was my perception. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I just filed a claim with the city that doesn't mention the word intimidation. It mentions emotional distress, humiliation, shame, bad breath, but it does not mention, actually, Dan, the security guard, was a nice guy. He didn't have bad breath, just had bad judgment. That was my view. Sort of the cops, but that's nothing new. Anyway, getting back to the current case of the people who are still facing charges, we kind of covered some of what they may have suffered. We're talking about the individual case of Jesse James, your case having to wait in Minnesota. Maybe I should jump ahead a little bit to, there are probably some, as the economic crisis deepens, you're going to find some significant organizing. Well, there's an anarchist convergence planned here for Santa Cruz in the next week or two, which presumably doesn't involve any direct protests. It's more sort of an academic enterprise, or, you know, more of a sort of a share experiences. I'm not sure. It's some training, perhaps. I'm not deeply involved in the whole process. But there will be events in the next year that will probably involve people coming together. There already was, I guess, in Europe recently, right?
Yeah. I think everybody can go to the Sub Rosa info shop and go check out the convergence. I think it's happening on May 7th. And yeah, there's going to be a lot of things happening, like that person who died in London and during the G20 protests. Like, those kind of things are going to happen, you know? And I think it's important for people to realize that in London, the people swarmed the cops, and they actually, you know, I feel like they won that battle, you know, getting into the banks and fighting back the police and taking back the streets, even though there were fewer people than, let's say, the RNC. I was looking up the numbers, and there was about 30,000 people at the RNC and about 1,000 cops. And in London, there was 10,000 police and about, I think it was 8,000 to 10,000 people. And yet the people still won, and I think it's because people were more radical, and that's how they won out on that.
Did you have any problems with liberals who were, should we say, trying to soften the protests at the Republican National Convention, or the Democratic National Convention for that matter? You know, people who are trying to cool things off, you know, stay on the sidewalk, don't take the street, you know, don't use such incendiary language in your signs, you know, talk nice to the police officer, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that still goes on even after the fact of the protest, because in the RNC, the parade route was like a mile long or less, I think maybe half a mile long. town, people just were allowed to walk in one circle and had to leave immediately thereafter and could not walk anywhere else in the downtown area. And people were discouraged from doing direct actions. But I think what was important is in St. Paul, they came up with this thing called the St. Paul Principles, where all the people who were organizing for protests said that they were not going to blast each other in the media and that they were going to respect the diversity of tactics and diversity of time and space. And so people were going to do things that weren't going to implicate other people into being arrested. I think that was really important that came out of the RNC.
And did that, in fact, happen? There wasn't that much internal dissension or public criticism of different tactics. I myself am guilty of that. I know in Santa Cruz I'm critical of other activists, you know.
I think that afterwards, people, other activists did not really, you know, try to blame specifically anarchists, because those are who are the people who are being targeted right now by the police there. And, you know, the other activists in the area did not jump on that bandwagon and try to do that. But I feel like a lot of individual people, like, for example, the thing with Jesse James, a lot of, I'm sure, liberals and Obama supporters could say, hey, you know, you were caught committing a crime. You deserve to, you know, deal with all this. And I think that that's not fair to say, because he's never been found guilty yet. And I don't know if he's guilty or not, but that is irrelevant of the fact. You should not be treated like this if you aren't guilty yet. And, like, for example, he's had charges added.
You shouldn't be tortured if you are found guilty.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you should serve a term. Let me ask you, though, you were talking about, or actually I was asking you before we began recording about, and you answered me about, while it's true that people are not guilty technically until found guilty by a jury or by a judge, if they waive the jury, or if the jury is waived by them, for them, by the fact that it's an infraction. That happens a lot in Santa Cruz. It's nonetheless true that people do things, and they're obviously guilty, like Johannes Meserle, the Oakland BART cop who shot dead Oscar Grant III, is obviously guilty of killing him. Was it first, second, or third degree murder? I don't know, but it was obviously one of the three. And you don't have to wait for a trial to say that, unless you don't believe the video evidence. So I don't mind saying they're guilty of criminal conduct, no question about it. So there are some things that we can learn. So, for instance, if you have had your personal contacts with some of the individuals, the one you mentioned who pled guilty, again, his name is
Dustin Morales,
you have knowledge both from what he said in court and from your own personal discussion with him, and there was some controversy about this, that he did, in fact, throw some rocks through a window.
I guess I won't say.
Well, he said he did. You didn't see it, I assume.
No, I wasn't there, and I don't think there was any evidence at all for this to happen, and I'm not going to say that he personally told me this, but he admitted guilt to this in court. And I think that, yeah, I mean, a lot of people were pressured into doing that anyway because of the charges people were facing. Like, he was threatened with terrorism if he did not plead guilty, basically. And people were threatened with terrorism enhancements if they didn't plead guilty. And at every step, when people were trying to fight their trials, they were adding more felonies onto their case. They did the same thing with me. Every time I kept them taking my case to trial further and further, they would add another felony. And they would try to do that to scare you into admitting guilt to something.
They do the same thing in Santa Cruz with misdemeanors, of course.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's some people who, from the RNC, were getting a misdemeanor every week, literally, added onto their case the further they got to trial, because the prosecutors knew that if you actually went to trial and had a jury trial, you'd probably be found not guilty.
And in all candor, I haven't really heard that misdemeanors are added in cases where people are refusing to plead guilty. They usually, charges are usually dropped and lessened as they get closer to trial. So in the case of Donna Dice, who I mentioned earlier, the woman whose arm was broken by Sergeant Christian Lamas, still on the force, still undisciplined as far as I know, initially she was charged with a couple of other things. I think assaulting an officer or battery on an officer because she had a cup of coffee in her hand as the officer swung her around. And also something about something involving marijuana, even though I don't think they ever connected any marijuana with her. They found marijuana nearby or something, or there was a pipe thrown into a trash can, a marijuana pipe. I mean, completely trivial bullshit that you're paying police officers hundreds of dollars and courts thousands of dollars to deal with. It's ridiculous. But those charges were dropped down to simply resisting arrest, because that's an easier charge to prove, probably. And the only witness to all this are, I guess, I'm told, six or seven witnesses that Donna Dice has, people who were nearby watching this incident happen with officer who was not apparently in any really visible or clear police uniform, and the officer himself, Sergeant Lamas, without any other witnesses to the precipient event. Anyway, so charge, I want to clarify, I've not heard of more charges being leveled in Santa Cruz. I don't wish to exonerate the district attorney's office or the police unduly, but I also want to be accurate about what they do. You're listening to Vernon Rodriguez in an interview about the Republican National Convention, the Jesse James case, which I've talked about a little bit before, as well as his own case. He had recently had charges dropped, and some other cases there, and some debate about this on indiebay.org.
Yeah, it's a way of intimidation, and a lot of times people can't handle that. You know, you don't want to get a terrorism charge on you for you know, doing activism, and so you might plead guilty to something that you might not necessarily have done.
Right, but as a hard reporter who wants to both show solidarity with those who are fighting the government and at the same time retain his credibility with the broader community, I would have to ask you, is it your opinion that he was guilty, whether you have no evidence of it or not? And I don't want to push you further on that because I don't want you to have to admit on tape things you might not want to admit. But for the, you know, was he in fact guilty of throwing rocks through a window, in your opinion? Even though he didn't deserve bullshit in the jail, didn't deserve to have his civil rights restricted, you know, didn't deserve the punishment he probably got, but was he guilty of throwing rocks through a window? Not that he plead guilty, not that he say he was guilty, but in your opinion, was he guilty?
The only thing I could say is yes, but the only time I ever heard him say it was in court. So that's all I really can go off of. And, I mean, I don't want to implicate people in things that they don't say themselves, you know, because I don't know the extent of the situation or what happened. But, I mean, judging from that, I would probably say that he probably did it just because he said that they did it and they didn't have the all they had was police evidence or police witnesses.
No videotape.
No videotape, no photos or anything
like
that.
He had no witnesses that he was not he was elsewhere.
Not to my knowledge. I wasn't at his court trial for that happening. But so this is just, you know, preliminary things that happened through court. And
right.
So this is not speaking about Jesse James or what happened with him yet, you know, because I'm not necessarily sure what happened to him. And
this
even
is about, again, another person
who I guess was in the same area. This
Elijah.
Dustin Machete Morales.
Yes. Sorry. I'll get the Elijah from. So I've got to say that, you know, some of the discussion on Indy Bay has been, well, he admitted it in court, and so he probably did it, and I wanted to find out if he had done it. And I'm skeptical based on what you told me and also what you told me off tape, that you may be feeling you're compromising other people by simply directly acknowledging that you may have heard from either him or other people that this, in fact, did happen. And as he's a Santa Cruzan, you don't want to disregard, disrespect him, and nor do I, for that matter. Again, as I've discussed with you off tape, there is a matter of the truth in the record, even if it hurts us in a certain sense, although I don't know if it's going to hurt us much because the case has already been resolved, and he did plead to it. So in any case, though, the main issue, and your point is really well taken. I'm drawing this long thing out because, frankly, a troll, or let's say a skeptic on Indy Bay raised the issue. I guess it shows the power of the troll or something, or the power of the skeptic. I'm always a passionate guy for the devil's advocate position to go after, because sometimes it does let you look at other aspects of the truth than you would normally look at. You have to critically re-examine it. And the truth, the question is, no, that activists aren't always telling you the whole entire truth. They can't, because they face sometimes criminal penalties if they do. And in the context of what they're doing, the struggle is a somewhat broader one. But you don't want to, you know, be degraded into a situation where you're a Stalinist who's constantly, rewarping and reshifting things because of the latest party line. It's a hard row to hoe. Any comments?
I just say that a lot of activists are put into really difficult positions because the state does things like makes people testify against each other, you know, and does deals where if you don't testify against somebody else, then they'll increase your penalty. So, you know, for that reason, you know, a lot of people aren't very open about what necessarily happened in certain events. But yeah, I mean, all I can really say is that I infer from what
I'm not asking you to make new statements, but I'm just saying that this is not about what the courts do, and it's not about what the police do. It's what about we in the activist community do, and how much those in the outside community can trust what we say when we're faced with possible legal penalties for what we're saying. I mean, obviously, if somebody asks you, well, did you do it? And you say, I'm not going to answer that question, you know, because I got to go to trial on it. The immediate inference is, well, you do it. You did do it because you. If you didn't do it, you'd be saying you didn't do it, and you'd be acknowledging your innocence. But that's kind of like what a police officer says when he says, can I come in and look through your house and check out your bedroom? And if you're innocent, there's no problem because, you know, we won't find any evidence of a crime. Now, it's not quite the same because the community is not the police. But the community, it does include the police. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people have gone to jail just for, you know, like wearing a bandana, you know, at a protest. So people do get served time and are investigated for very minor things, and, you know, who knows if, you know, repression might continue through all the people that I've mentioned so far just because it's on the radio or things are inferred from that, you know. So it's difficult because a lot of things are inferred from things that aren't even true. And it's, you know, it's a scary situation when people who aren't even involved in certain things are, you know, punished. So there's serious crimes right now, and they're specifically targeting the anarchist community.
You're referring, of course, to the crimes of torture and cover-up of high government officials who are, should we say, guilty of holding people for 5, 6, 7, 8 years with no legitimate charges. No, wait, you're talking about throwing a rock through a window.
Yeah, I mean, Dustin could have been found guilty of, you know, vandalism of property or something like that, because they choose how far they extend these penalties, you know. Or you could have had, you know, you're rioting in the third degree for the same thing. So I think also if you're found guilty of something, it's what you're actually found guilty of and how severe the penalty is. He served a month in jail for that. And, you know, I don't think that's fair myself for, you know, something that probably didn't really cost that much.
Well, whose window got broken?
It was a bank, from my understanding.
Well, there you are. That probably created the crisis of confidence in our banking system.
Yeah, exactly. If that one window wasn't broken, who knows where the stimulus money would have gone.
Butterfly's wing can have multiple impacts a million years down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
There you are. Well, what more do we want to talk about? You're coming back to Santa Cruz in September. What nefarious schemes are afoot for them?
I really don't know. I think number one right now is trying to save the community studies program, because I'm a community studies student, and luckily enough, I was able to still complete my field study through all this.
Even Mike Rotkin agrees with you there.
Yeah. I definitely got credit for doing all this and going through all the protests and learning from what happened. And I support everyone to go to the Coalition to Save Community Studies. Don't know the website, but type that in. And hopefully by the time I get back, my major will still be here, and I'll be able to graduate school. So I think first and foremost, I'll probably be trying to, you know, get into that battle when I get back in, because I'm sure this won't stop. From my understanding, it's been politically motivated, and the faculty was told that even if they raised independent funds and got a grant for the community studies, that it would not change whether or not they would exist anymore.
You know, it seems to me like this is kind of Of course, I'm not in the community studies program, and I don't have a lot of respect for some of the people who run the community studies program, although I recognize that a lot of activists go out into the community and get credit. And Mike Rotkin has even sent people, I think, given them credit for coming to Huff meetings and so forth, the group I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. But it does tend to divert attention from issues of poverty and homelessness in Santa Cruz or injustice in the police department, where the same people who are, you know, up there saying, save the community studies program, are the same people who are covering up the problems in these other areas, and tends to give me a stomachache.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have my own critiques of, you know, the way certain people have conducted themselves in city politics and stuff like that. I've been here for a while and seen a lot of things happen. But I think that what's important is that the people involved in community studies have never tried to, I guess, they respect the diversity of tactics and that diversity of people who wanted to do what they want to do. And, you know, I was supported through my whole ordeal, and I really appreciated that of everyone in community studies. And I think it's a really valuable major because you could do whatever you want with it, you know, and you can get critiques and get support.
I'm not attacking community studies, but I'm just saying I know activists who were going to be involved in protests around the sleeping ban and the downtown ordinances are no longer going to work on that because they want to work on saving the community studies program. In fact, my thought is that there are plenty of people who want to save the community studies program, but very few people who are willing to put themselves out to defend the rights of poor people downtown. And when this broadly acceptable project, kind of like the Obama campaign, it kind of impresses me in the same way, you know, because the regents are mostly Republicans, probably. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure. But they certainly have a Republican mentality. And the governor is Republican and so forth. If this becomes the basis for, you know, siphoning off energy against, for example, the war, which we've seen virtually no war protests against war, very small protests, or against, you know, the banks, the bailout of the banks, where you only seem to get the right-wingers getting together for Tea Party Day on the tax day. I mean, it's kind of a sad deal. Not only. I mean, I think the raging granny showed up, too. But, you know, mostly it's all, let's all get right behind the community studies program and Obama, and all, sort of all gets merged together in this sick pastiche.
Yeah, I mean, I understand completely what you're saying, and I was working a lot to get people to go to the Denver convention, Democratic National Convention, against Obama, and I know there was a lot of energy siphoned into that, and the thing that sucks, I think, is that all over the UCs, too, is that there is right now, like, a really systematic suppression of dissent. They're arresting activists at all the UCs left and right. I think a couple weeks ago, UCLA, they arrested a couple people recently, too. And I think this is just
what... Animal rights activists, or...?
I don't think anyone knows exactly what happened, but I think it has something to do with that. But I think they were arrested for trespassing. That's what they're being charged for. But I don't think there has been a lot of details arisen about the people in UCLA so far, because that happened a couple weeks ago. But, of course, there's people from UC Berkeley and UC Santa Cruz who were arrested.
Well, I keep trying to find out what happens with the region's September rules that supposedly make it illegal to carry a sign or attend an event on campus without permission from the proctor or whatever that was promulgated, according to the Good Times article last fall, by the regents and by the board of the UCSC up there. I talked to John Williams about it on my show, but in the last 5 or 6 phone calls, he hasn't returned. I don't know what's going on with that issue. Apparently, 3 students were suspended because they essentially, you know, either they stepped outside the so-called 3 free speech zones or at UCSC, or they had friends who were on campus who weren't supposed to have been because they didn't have clearance from the Führer, I mean from the proctor or whatever the hell it was. So I don't know what's going on up there. Any word on the rules as to how protests are being conducted and have further students been suspended? I know that as a man who's been keeping close contact from Minnesota, from your winter wear, you know exactly what's going on.
I know about some of that, but because I haven't been here in a while, I don't know the full extent, but I do know that the free speech zones and regulations and the times that you can have free speech are still in place. And I know that they've harassed people recently at the club day that they're having, right before school started at UCSC during the fall. And they attempted to, you know, harass people who were handing out flyers for anti-war organizing there. There's still a lot of suppression of dissent that's going on. And those rules are still in place, and they're still harassing people. I don't know about the people being suspended, but I know that all those things are still going on. And specifically because that people have been, I think, effective, at least in the union organizing and other ways, in getting people to come to campus and having, you know, a lot of support for the kind of activism that's going on. But yeah, I mean, that's still happening, and I don't know about people being suspended. I know people were being attempted to be suspended last year, but I don't know how that all ended up. So
me neither. I keep getting no response when I ask about it, but who knows, one of these days I may get the word and pass it on to everybody out there. We've been talking with
Roberto Rodriguez.
Anything you want to sum up with or anything you want to add that hasn't been said?
I guess people should just, long story short about all this is no matter what, you know, what people are found guilty of, you need to realize that the kind of punishments people are facing are extremely severe and they're life-altering, you know? Like, I'm personally traumatized from everything that's happened, and I'll never forget it. And I think everyone should go and try to support Jesse James and go to supportjessejames.wordpress.com, and if you guys can donate to his legal fund, that'd probably be the best way to support him right now, because he's facing a lot of jail time if something happens, and he also has a lot of money that he needs to pay for his lawyer. And I would encourage people to go to rnc08arrestees.wordpress.com and rnc08report.org, and look out for the Sub Rosa Bookshop. Congratulations to everybody there for opening it up, and I hope to see everybody again in September.
Yeah, and I would remind people that next week, May 4th, Monday, at 9 o'clock in Department, I think it's Department 1 or 2, but it's the
Sorry, this is outdated information because it's May 18th is the DICE trial.
Because she declined to answer Sergeant Chris.
And that was an interview, sorry for the squeal, with Vernon Rodriguez, one of the Republican National Convention protesters, says he was the first one arrested, who had to spend many, many months in Minneapolis until charges were finally dropped. I think he said in an earlier part of the interview, which you can find by going to our archives, which are at huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org, and then click on the name of the show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, well, which was because he finally got a hold of the videotapes from the police that showed that he wasn't there, so they had no evidence that he was actually there, but he had to stay there for months, going back every 2 weeks to court, or that was what he was telling me, if I'm remembering correctly. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and the call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-3772. In case you'd like to call in, probably in a few minutes or half an hour, actually. We'll be getting a call, hopefully, from Micah Posner, who has been ticketed for his bike activism, I should say specifically, parading without a permit. Boy, I thought that went out with the button shoes, but not according to the Santa Cruz Police Department and the Santa Cruz Sentinel. There's also, of course, an anarchist convergence coming up tonight. Starts tonight at the Sub Rosa Courtyard, 703 Pacific. It's $5 at the door. And it's outside on the Sub Rosa stage. I'm reading this. Not sure exactly what's going to be on the stage. It says the convergence will include an anarchist book fair, free school conference, workshops, speakers, discussions, music, games, and other events. Any sexual interludes? We'll find out. Santa Cruz will host its first ever anarchist book fair, a two-day exposition of books, zines, pamphlets, art, film, video, and other cultural and political productions of the anarchist movement on May 9th and 10th at the Sub Rosa Info Shop. And interesting, I talked to an old anarchist book man, Joe Williams, way back in the day, 5 years ago. Joe's also a supporter of SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, a street performer group. And we had talked a lot about simply setting up a book fair on the sidewalk, because it's legal under the Constitution to do that. And even though Santa Cruz police practice was to harass people with any kind of literature or merchandise on the sidewalk that was being distributed for either donation or profit, which would be an interesting test case. Instead, of course, we have everything is being done on private property. This is the anarchist book fair will be happening at the Sub Rosa Info Shop, as will the first in some time Know Your Rights training, which actually I understand has been happening in different cities. Jason and Wes do a very instructive and amusing and educational Know Your Rights training, which involves them dressing up as cop and tramp, or cop and perp, whatever you want, cop and victim or suspect, and then showing you how to adequately respond to the police. And I've been kind of looking for ways to expand this kind of interchange, role-playing, so that it actually gets very specific to Santa Cruz, and we can do it and show people how to deal with the downtown ordinances, or get some, at least some ideas about how to address police harassment on the street when they look for your ID and they look for your you know, how do you do when someone wants your ID? How do you when someone wants you to move on? When someone tells you you're 14 feet from a building, that sort of thing, you got to go. And they say the music is too loud, you have to move on. Can't be in the park here, you can't sleep in the park. A lot of these things are bogus claims by the police, but with the force of implied intimidation and legal action behind them can have a real significant impact. Anyway, that's going to be 10 a.m. tomorrow morning in the courtyard of the Sub Rosa Cafe at 7:03 Pacific. Also happening tonight, starting at 7:30, North American Free School Conference happens. Actually, this is in conjunction with the Santa Cruz Anarchist Convergence. Free School Community Picnic. I don't think they're having a picnic tonight, but this is the beginning of all these activities. There'll be 3 days of workshops, panels, presentations from May 8th to 10th. I guess that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, to provide further opportunities to learn more and share our own experience and creativity. I'm reading from the Indie Bay website, Santa Cruz Indie Media. Workshop tracks include community interrelatedness, green scare security culture, DIY infrastructure, applied anarchism, and resistance. Additionally, there'll be a kickoff performance event, shows, music. This is the kickoff performance, I guess, tonight at 7:30. Bike games, picnics, probably citations from the police. Nah, they wouldn't do that. Campfires and skill shares. You're invited. The event starts with an all-day orientation May 7th at the Sub Rosa Info Shop. I think it's May 8th, but maybe there was an all-day orientation today. I thought it started at 7:30, but maybe I'm missing something here. Bring yourselves, your radical ideas, your passions, your comrades, and whatever you need to self-sufficiently take care of yourself and your crew. We will try to provide housing and food to those who need it, so they're appealing to people from outside the city. Participate if you're interested in speaking or participating in a workshop, panel, or discussion, or if you would like to table at the Anarchist Book Fair, please contact us at Santa Cruz Anarchist at riseup.net. And that's on the Indie Bay website under the calendar. And then tomorrow, looking at the schedule, and it's kind of interesting. Where's the list of workshops here? They're happening in a variety of places: Pacific Cultural Center, Loudon Nelson, Sub Rosa Cafe, of course. And there is a final list of the workshops, panels, and speakers. Doesn't say what happens when, though, at least not at this particular point. But I think if you go to the original website, which is santacruzanarchist.org, which I'm doing now, you can see what's cooking. Let's see here. There's going to be, it's kind of hard to read. 50. There's a local history bike tour. There's workshop times. Camping at the Convergence. These are, I guess, all aspects of Convergence that you can look up. The workshops that are happening are going to be, they start tomorrow. 10 a.m. is Free School for Kids, a panel. And that's going to be happening at the Bike Church, which again is around 7:03 Pacific, thereabouts, at Spruce and Pacific, about a block from Laurel and Pacific. And there's also at 10 a.m. Cuba's Current Political Situation. Raquel will be presenting that, and that's going to be in the computer kitchen. Don't ask me where that is. Then there'll be this Know Your Rights and Resist the Police State Forum that I've mentioned to you with Wes and Jason. That's going to be in the Sub Rosa Courtyard. And at noon tomorrow, Lowdown on Grand Juries, Ben Rosenfield at the Bike Church. He'll be giving that at noon tomorrow. Also at noon, Destroying Patriarchy from Within. That's going to be in the computer kitchen. I guess the computer kitchen may be in the same general area as the Bike Church and the Sub Rosa Cafe out there at Pacific and Spruce. And there's, again at noon, Self-Defense Workshops with the Girl Army. And that's going to be in the Loudon Nelson Park. And at 2 p.m., 2 hours later, Nonviolent Communication and Anarchism, Potential and Pitfalls. Again, in the computer kitchen, 2 p.m. Friday tomorrow. 2 p.m. Friday also, Practical Organizing to Overthrow the U.S. Government and Global Capitalism. Whoa. Sub Rosa Courtyard. Then at 4 p.m., Responding to Intimate Violence to Beyond Rules. Computer kitchen at 4 o'clock. and the current crisis and the coming insurrection in the Sub Rosa Courtyard. And then also at 4 o'clock, Blue Anarchy for Beginners, Anarchist Yacht Club at the Chavez Co-op, which is down near the beach. What is it? 123 3rd? I'm not sure, but you can download this. Actually, that's going to be 4 p.m. on Saturday, or at least that's what it says. It's a little, the schedule's a little confusing. You can check out this schedule. Looks like a lot of interesting workshops coming up. Again, in the general area of the Sub Rosa Cafe, and go online. You can Google for Santa Cruz Anarchist Convergence, and you'll find it. Looks like very educational activity. I'm not sure that there's actually much happening in the way of local protest against laws that criminalize poor people, or even any workshops. Of course, I'm not volunteering to do a workshop, so how can I criticize? I guess, as Captain Clark would say, because I can. Anyway, let's take a brief musical break and then come back. And perhaps, if you're listening and you have some thoughts, you might want to call in. This would be the time, if you have any. And we'll talk. 427-3772 is the call-in number.
Listening to the sound of motorcycles going past. It's pretty exciting. And the wind is blowing. It's about 2:25. I'm talking to a guy who doesn't want to be identified, but he has traveled recently in Canada. And what did you find in Canada?
Along Highway 1A, going from west to east, all the laundromats along the highway have showers for quarters. And it makes sense because they already got hot water, heaters, drainage, all that, right? They should have the same thing here where we can always keep clean. Another thing there is not... The parks, you can sleep in them at night, they close the gate, and you got to be out at 7 or 8 in the morning.
How much does it cost in a park in Canada?
You can sleep in the park. You know.
In the city parks or in...
City parks, along city parks, not campground parks.
Right.
The city parks, you're allowed to sleep in them. They, you know, if they have a gate, they close the gate, and then they let you out in the morning. Even in Vancouver at Stanley Park, you can park in the park in your car on these roads, and they lock the gate at like a certain time in the evening, and then they open in the morning, and you got
to
leave.
You have to have a vehicle?
No. You can camp. You just can't put up your tent or nothing. But you can sleep in your sleeping bag and everything, as long as you're out by 7 or 8 in the morning. They come
now,
in and wake
you up. Find, you've traveled across Canada. Do you find that a lot of local homeless people do that, or just travelers?
There's both. There's a lot of homeless people, too, up there. But they're more catering to the homeless people. They're more, you know, sympathetic than we are here. But just being able to get a shower and everything makes a big difference, you know? It really does.
I'd never known that. I appreciate that information.
You wouldn't have so much problem, I don't know, bugs and all that. You know, you wouldn't have that problem with all the bugs and scabies and stuff if you had showers like that here. And they make money, you know?
Not to mention the swine flu.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. And we won't even say who you are, Mr. Anonymous. So I know you were saying that contrasts with here where... you know, you go over, you have to wait for hours for a shower at the homeless service center or at Kuroda's soup kitchen, and then you get cold water?
Yeah, then you get cold water because there's so many people, you know, getting showers there. You know, so they need a lot more available showers, and then we wouldn't have problems with people being dirty or people having bugs or anything, you know?
Of course, the U.S. is a bigger country, and there are, you know, I guess 10 or 20 or 30 times as many people. California is,
yeah,
I suppose California has as many people as the state of Canada, everybody in Canada put together, probably. But still, thank you very much again. So I just had a conversation with an anonymous individual in front of El Centro. He's been there for a while, and he was critical of homeless people who sleep in front of the door of El Centro during the winter, claiming they are stupid and simply deserve to be, should we say, shoved aside when he comes out. I kind of treat this as a control mentality deal, but as they give someone a chance to bully, and they tend to bully more, even if they're not bullies to begin with. But because I know this guy, he doesn't seem like a bully to me. Anyway, just a quick note. So in the corner of Soquel and Pacific, and we're talking with
John McBride from Anchorage, Alaska.
And John, you're here with a backpack, your boombox, and your sign, Disabled Vietnam Vet, or Nam Vet, trying to go home. Anything will help. Thank you. Where's home?
Well, it's Homer, Alaska. It's 200 miles south of Anchorage.
And what brings you down to the 48?
I went to the VA hospital in Fort McKenzie in Sheridan, Wyoming for a program. And a friend down there told me about Santa Cruz, so I came and checked it out. And I checked it out, and now I'm ready to go home.
How long were you checking it out for?
I've been here for 2 weeks.
And what have you found here?
A lot of drugs.
Have you been outside mostly?
Yeah, I've been camping out.
Yeah. Been hassled by the police or not?
No, they've been nice coming by here. They're real nice.
Cool. Because you have your doing a little spare changing. How is the community treating you? Are they giving you any support?
Yes, I had a lady buy me a ticket to Bellingham.
Wow. So now you need to just have enough money to get from Bellingham up to Alaska.
Yeah, from Bellingham to Anchorage.
You seem a little chilly out there. What's your condition as a vet? What kind of problems have you had?
I've got mental health problems. I take psych medication.
And does that help?
Yeah.
What kind of medication is it?
Trazodone, Spiridone, Seroquel, Amitriptyline.
That looks like a little tardive dyskinesia, perhaps.
Yeah.
You're trembling a bit.
Yeah.
Anything you've observed in Santa Cruz that you think we should know about that particularly interested you?
A lot of nice people here, really. A lot of nice people I met. Been real helpful to me and everything.
Cool, man. Well, good luck.
All right.
Passing by the change machine in front of Borders, I still see on the sidewalk, chalked right next to it, no homeless beggars within 50 feet. I think it's chalked by one of the people around the cop watch table last Saturday. Apparently the sidewalk hasn't been washed since then. Talking to the notorious CJ Stock. Hi, CJ.
Yeah, hello.
And I've just told you about the proposed the demonstration that Bernard's going to do tomorrow in front of the bench in front of Rosie McCann's. And I just noticed, I probably noticed it before because I must have noticed it, but the bench you were sitting on in front of World Market Bazaar has been removed, although the bench across the street in front of East West, both on Walnut Street, is still there. How is the bench seating treating you these days?
It isn't.
You're not sitting on the benches anymore?
No.
What do you do? Sit on the planters or sit in the stores?
I sit on my stool.
I think you have a stool. Uh-huh. So you can sit there as long as you want, right?
Yeah. And sit and sing and play. I'm playing more guitar. I basically am staying out of sight, man, because cops have been so gnarly lately.
There's less people downtown. There are occasional people, panhandlers I've talked to, but I have not heard one street performer today.
We're staying on. Most of us are just backing off.
You know, it is now... It's about 15 to 3, Tuesday, the day of the city council meeting, the last city council meeting of the month, April 28th. What do you think of this protest about the bench thing tomorrow?
Well, I think it's a good idea because it's called a public bench for a reason. Doesn't mean select people of income can sit there. Means anybody can sit there.
Well, now remember, they would say to you, well, yeah, anybody can sit there, but only for an hour. Everybody suffers the same restrictions, whether you're rich or poor. The rich and the poor both, they refuse to allow them to beg in the streets or sleep under the bridges.
I have seen people sit for hours here. People of obvious means.
Really?
Yeah.
I would think the lobbyist means we wouldn't really want to sit for a very long period of time outside on Pacific Avenue. They just kind of do something else.
I don't know. But I'm just saying, as there seem to be pointing out the local homeless, I don't know. It feels like that.
So you've been playing more guitar these days?
Oh, yeah.
Where can people hear you?
Over in front of crowds.
I shall tell people, and hopefully maybe...
I play in the evenings because there's no money out here in the daytime, and there's too much reason to be harassed.
And are you getting some kind of income out of that?
Oh, yeah.
What's your average take?
Sometimes it goes as low as $20 a night, but usually it's a little more than that.
How are you doing as far as sleeping places go?
Ducking and dodging.
In Santa Cruz City Limits, outside?
Yeah. I can't say that out loud.
It's a secret. Well, thank you, CJ.
My pleasure, really.
All right, take care.
Right.
We're talking with Pan. And Pan, you're a man who has life in a stroller here. Walking stick, umbrella, water bucket, sleeping bag, goddamn, the whole caboodle. I just talked to a guy who said he's friends with Anna and Miguel, the couple that the city is pursuing to stop them from sleeping downtown. He likes them, but he thinks that they are too overt in their sleeping, that they should go hide out further away from the downtown, that even if he were a cop, he'd beat them over the head or something. But I don't agree with him. I think there should, and I think you probably don't either. You were saying your thought that it's hard finding a place to sleep anywhere?
There are only so many niches that you can really hide. And the police, I ask them, right, you say, where do you go? And he says, you just have to be basically invisible, unseen. And almost all the little niches here, even all the way down Highway 9, along the San Lorenzo River, everywhere, places you wouldn't imagine, are filled with people who are, you know, in other words, there are a lot of people who can't find a place because they're already taken. And the cops, if they find you anywhere, they're going to harass you. It's as simple as that. You can't sleep here. In other words, you're illegal.
Thou shalt not sleep.
You're breaking the law.
Breaking the law.
Yep. Well, no matter what you're doing, you're trespassing. That's why I say this is not really our country. They just let us rent it, if we can afford it.
It's supposed to be public space. You're supposed to be allowed to be in public space. Have you gotten ticketed or cited yourself?
No, I've been pretty gracious in those dealings, and they've been fair enough with me. But I'm pushing the limit, I know.
Do you sleep generally downtown or in places away from the downtown?
Well, remember where Nears Lagoon used to be?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's still little pieces of wild stuff around there.
Take note, Officer Winston.
Oh, yeah, well, they all know. And that's their bailiwick also, you see.
And do they run through there giving tickets, or is that a relatively free sleeping zone?
Well, I'm not in touch with everybody else there, so I'm not really sure. But I know that they do give tickets if you're going to be belligerent about it, if you're going to insist on coming.
You're right, as a human being, to sleep legally somewhere.
You know better than that in this society.
Yeah. Pan, thank you. Anything you want to add?
Not at this time, but thank you.
Sure.
And sometime I'd love to talk to you personally.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that. Santa Cruz City Council, about 3:30 on August 20th, April 28th.
And it looks like we've come to the last City Council meeting, though there's another one coming up next Tuesday. City Council meets every other Tuesday, usually it's second and fourth Tuesdays of the month. Often at night, but for invariably in the afternoons at 3 o'clock. This has become sort of the rule that Cynthia Matthews has followed, as well as cutting short oral communications to 2 minutes per person and cutting back on the right to speak on over three-quarters of the agenda, essentially muzzling most discussion on the agenda. She has set up afternoon sessions, which, of course, are difficult for people who are working, and in a certain sense, they're more accessible for people who are homeless. In another sense, they're not. I guess they're more accessible to those who have to be indoors, who are the lucky few 46 people who go indoors every night, or the 1,500 to 2,000 who are out there. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. Who's the mayor?
The mayor is Cynthia Matthews.
The mayor is still Cynthia Matthews?
Yeah,
I heard it was some guy.
Turn down your radio there so you don't get confused.
I can hear you.
Okay.
I just wanted to call you for a second. I just wanted to find out who the mayor was. Who's the vice mayor?
Mike Rotkin.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I'm sorry. You're on the air, by the way. You have any comments?
Yeah, I want to if you get the chance, why don't you elaborate a little on Crow's case, if you know anything? I haven't heard him call in for a while.
No, I haven't heard anything from Crow, and I haven't seen him around town. Crow, of course, was... actually, I think that if you're talking about the case of petty theft where he defended the drum circle, that's I think that's actually been resolved. And you could hear my...
Oh, okay. I just know he said he'd been harassed. Cops chased him off from the place they always park at on Highway 1.
Oh, that's probably another case. You have to get in touch with him and ask him what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Robert, I'm going to go ahead and keep listening. I'll
all right, then.
You later.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. And so, let's see. On with the show, I guess. Let's hear some more.
Next is the...
And actually, what we're doing now is we're gonna listen to a little of the city council. I went to city council because Bernard Klitzner, who did a protest on the bench against the law that says you can only be on the bench for an hour, and after that you're subject to actually up to $1,000 fine. Infractions are theoretically up to $1,000, but in practice, probably between $100 and $200. If you don't move when told to do so. So Bernard had a big sign, and he went and sat on the bench, and we actually interviewed a lot of people and tried to get the police to give him a citation or at least to warn him, because we were interested in seeing if the law was fairly enforced or if the police just used it to go after people they didn't like. And I don't think they much like Bernard, but they didn't want to go after him, I think, because we had video cameras and tape recorders, and, you know, they would have been embarrassed to engage in such a ridiculous use of police resources, even though we were members of the public, some of us, and making complaints about it. And we have the right, just like any other person in the public, to insist that the law be enforced, or at least you can actually enforce the law yourself. You can make what's called a citizen's arrest, and that's what we were trying to do. Police essentially took away our right to do that, showing us that that's only selectively given to those they favor, like merchants or upper middle class people or people that they have some more respect for, which of course has nothing to do with the real equal protection of the laws. It has to do with a police state kind of thing, or a plutocracy where wealth rules. But then again, that's really kind of what we're in. Now, at City Council, Bernard was there. This is the day before his bench protest. He went there to talk about the protest and to tell the city council what he intended to do, more important, to tell the community, perhaps. And there were some interesting things that happened there, and this is a tape of some of what went down.
Our afternoon session is being broadcast by Community TV. Here, yet again, and Jeff Danielle are our technicians. We do not have an afternoon session, an evening session, so...
This, of course, is Mayor Cynthia Matthews talking.
This is being conducted this afternoon. I will next ask about statements of disqualification.
I tentatively will say that on part of item 16, I need to be disqualified, and I want to, when the item comes up, I'm going to check with staff to make sure that I think there's a part of it that I would be.
And there's a kind of a process that happens where members of the council disqualify themselves on certain items, and there's a presentation that happens if they want to give a presentation. Members of the public are not allowed to speak at or respond to presentations, although that's really a violation of the Brown Act, which allows the public to comment.
Up to a half hour for oral communication. As usual, we will limit that to 2 minutes per individual, up to 5 minutes for organizations. Well, nonetheless, no. That's the amount of time we...
And that has to be said that on this occasion, she was allowing, Cynthia Matthews was allowing Bernard to speak for 5 minutes, because if you're an organization and you request time in advance, you usually get 5 minutes. We have an incoming call. We'll pause for that. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Micah.
Hi, Micah. Let's see if I can hear you now. Say something.
Hi, Robert. It's Micah.
Okay. Well, here, let me switch to another mic, Micah. Hang on. Can you hear me still?
Yes.
Good. Okay, I hope the community can hear me as well. I was actually just looking over the Sent Anal article that was... You were front page news yesterday. Are you feeling privileged and proud?
Proud? Sure. Yeah.
You are, eh?
Of course, what we're talking about is a story in the Santa Cruz Sentinel about a citation you received. You want to tell us what that was about?
Well, let's see. On last November, we had a great family, safe, friendly ride on King Street. It was about over 100 people, and there was just really great fun, and it was on a quiet day, and, you know, it was just a peaceful event. And like a month, so we started publicizing the ride. The reason we're having rides on King Street is because, as hopefully everyone knows, there were two cyclists killed on Mission last year, and King has been identified as, you know, the obvious alternative. So we want King to be a safer street for cyclists. There's not any real amendment on King to make it a good place to ride, and therefore there's really no place to ride anywhere along the Mission corridor. So there's not really, you know, they widened Mission without putting in bike lanes, and they didn't put any, they just didn't think about cyclists at all. So we're proposing to modify King. It seems like the proposal that's the most, that the neighbors like the most is to do what's called a bike boulevard, where you sign the street, and you recommend the cyclist to ride in the road, and the cars share the road as honored guests, but the preference is for bikes. And then you get a bunch of the cars off the road, in this case on the Mission. You divert traffic on the Mission at some point on King and probably Escalona. Basically, you maze it out for cars, and you allow bikes to sort of just take a straight shot. So it's a great thing for the neighborhood because there's less noise and traffic, and it's easier to walk. And
there's also less fatalities. There was a rather serious incident. Well, there was a death last year, right?
Yeah, there were two deaths on Mission last year, and so exactly. So it's a safety measure, and it makes sense. It's kind of a mirror image. Like on Mission Street, you know, bikes are allowed, but it's not a good place to ride. So on King Street, cars would be allowed, and it wouldn't be primarily, that wouldn't be the primary use.
So there was essentially a sort of a family bike ride last November, mm-hmm. that Captain Clark didn't like much, apparently, according to his quote in the paper here.
Yeah, the thing that really bums me out about Captain Clark is that he's the same police officer who said that we shouldn't ride on Mission. So now he's saying we shouldn't ride on King, basically. It's illegal to ride on the sidewalk, and to the right of the street there's parked cars. So this mirrored the conversation I had with the poor special events woman who was totally caught in the middle. So she called us up and said, don't you want a permit for your ride? And we said, sure, that'd be great, you know. And then she called us a couple weeks later after talking to the police. And she said, I just want to make sure you're going to ride on the sidewalk. And I said, we can't ride on the sidewalk. It's illegal and dangerous. And she said, well, can you ride next to the curb?
And actually, people have been ticketed downtown repeatedly by police for riding on the sidewalk, even when it's not particularly dangerous.
Exactly. So then she said, well, can you ride next to the curb? I said, no, there's parked cars there. You know, so this is really the problem with King. You know, is that there's not really a prescribed way to ride it. So if you were to call Captain Clark, which I recommend, he doesn't have an answer for that, just like Mission. You know, the police have no guidance or no leadership about where a cyclist should ride on any street unless it's a street that's a bike facility. So we're trying to make King a bike facility, you know, so that it'll be safe and pleasant to ride on. In the meantime, the police are harassing us for using the street in the way that appears to us to be the most safe. Now, if Captain Clark disagrees, instead of harassing us, he should come out and say where he thinks we should ride on King and Mission and other streets that aren't bike facilities, but he won't. I mean, if you talk to him, he'll just talk around and around and around and around in circles. They refuse to you know, really take any responsibility for our safety. So, and that's the bummer thing about the article, is some people think of the police as safety experts, and I'm sure with regard to some matters they are, but when it comes to cycling, they're refusing to act like experts. They're not taking responsibility. They're not giving guidance. They're not entering in a conversation about where the safe place to ride is. They're just trying to harass us and make us.
Well, Captain Clark, and I may have mentioned this to you earlier, was available last night at this special meeting of the Parks Unit at the mm-hmm. police station that was open to the community from 6 to 8. Not that that was the main topic. Bikes, that is to say, was not the main topic. It was, you know, how wonderfully effective our parks unit is, or how ineffective. I guess the community had an opportunity to weigh in, though it was run by a number of what I regard as kind of right-wing vigilante organizations like the Downtown Neighbors and the Santa Cruz Neighbors and the Downtown Association, whose primary objective seems to be to run the homeless people out of the parks, at which point they start screaming, they're showing up on the downtown streets. Anyway, I mean, that's not really your topic, I know that.
No, it's not.
But, I mean, you do
I'm familiar with it.
You're familiar with it. I mean, it sounds like a similar situation. We got this complaint about bicyclists, you know, being unsafe on the sidewalks, and yet here you are planning an event. Let me ask you this. How many such events have you been a part of in the last few years, these mass bike rides that happen?
About a couple a year.
And I know that there's occasionally, there used to be monthly, what do they call the bike rides?
Critical Mass. Yeah, I guess more than a couple a year because I used to ride on Critical Mass, although I didn't order.
Critical Mass is what I'm thinking of. Yeah. I don't know what ever happened to Critical Mass. I guess they disappeared. I don't know. I haven't heard of them recently.
Yeah.
Has there been a Critical Mass recently? Or?
Within a few years there has been. I mean, there's a lot of group rides all the time. And
Critical Mass was a group that specifically took to the streets in numbers to take back the streets. And they, you know, to some extent ignored some of the traffic regulations, although they didn't. The only trouble they usually got into was with police officers who, you know, are rather rigid in their thinking about how bicyclists should behave. Well, I guess some irate motorists who believe they own the streets and the bicyclists should be, you know, regarded like tricyclists.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just wasn't thinking about it before, but now I realize that the absence or the diminishing of critical mass rides kind of parallels the increase in police. The increase in police repression. You've never
oh,
got.
No, there's tons of mass rides all the time. They call them midnight mystery rides.
Oh, okay, a different name.
Rides.
Okay.
The critical mass still goes sometimes. There's a ride with a name that I don't like. It actually has a sort of a flavor I don't like either, called the crank mob rides. And there's mass rides all the time.
Uh-huh.
So,
I mean, you're kind of what some people would call a namby-pamby kind of nice guy activist. I mean, you spent some time talking to me about, you know, trying to accommodate the police department. And
actually,
you know,
there was a policeman that showed up prior to this ride and made some suggestions. And I didn't like him that much, but, you know, I said, okay, sure. You know, I mean, if he wants to make a few suggestions, you know, he wanted us to break up the group when we were crossing at a light if it turned red, which usually at Critical Mass we would like to stay together. We think it's kind of safer and all, but, you know, he really wanted that, so we said, okay, we can accommodate you. And you know, of course, in case people aren't clear on this, I was not given a public ticket at the ride. You know, I was harassed later. They sent me something in the mail, so I never signed a ticket, and I never, you know, no one, it was not a public event. There was no chance.
Well, they didn't want to embarrass themselves by sending
right.
giving you a public ticket, perhaps.
Right.
It's hard to fathom the motivations
well,
of John Barisone, the city attorney. But
right. Well, they were there, so if they wanted to give me a ticket, then they could have.
So they must have felt that at some point you were unsafe, or they're just saying that you had, since more than 100 people joined the ride, you were obligated to stop at that moment and run down to City Hall to get a permit.
No, the permit, the citation is not for anything to do with safety. The citation is for organizing an event without a permit. So it's this whole circular argument where they wouldn't give you a permit unless we rode in a way that wasn't safe or that was illegal. And then after the event was over, and it was a completely safe, positive event. You know, you can tell from the pictures in the Sentinel, you can look in the Sentinel archives. You know, the Sentinel thought it was a great event. Everyone thought it was a great event. So then after the event's over, then they sent me a ticket for not getting a permit. Well, I didn't get a permit because they wouldn't give me a permit because they wanted us to ride in a way that was illegal or unsafe. So it's this whole circular kind of, it's exactly like the conversation with Captain Clark. It's like, well, where do you want us to ride? Well, I don't know, but you better not ride there. Well, where do you want us to ride? Well, I don't know, you better, you know, it's just this whole circular logic, and basically it just amounts to, you know, the police and, I suppose, Barisone or some other part of the city apparatus. They just want us to disappear. I mean, they just
let me quote Steve Clark. Of course, again, this is the Sentinel, so you can't be too sure, but he's inviting families, the Sentinel writes, mm-hmm. to come out with their kids to ride in the street, mm-hmm. said Santa Cruz Police Captain Steve Clark, who said that a permit could have ensured the road was closed and officers were stationed for the event. maybe this is a work, kind of a make work project for the police. He finally says, to invite the unsuspecting community out to an event where you haven't bothered to take the proper safety precautions is wildly irresponsible. Now, did you find angry mothers and fathers, you know, stopping you and shaking their fists at you for being wildly irresponsible?
No, it was a bunch of happy people and some ukulele players. I mean, we care a ton about public safety, and we kept the ride perfectly safe. I mean, that'd be an interesting thing for Sergeant or Captain Clark to say if there was a an unsafe incident during the ride. Then I could feel guilty, and I could think about, oh my gosh, maybe I should have, you know, done something different. But it's pretty funny to say that after a completely safe ride. I mean, and you know, with Sergeant, he's mixing the whole permit thing because he says that they offered us a permit. Well, I described the permit they offered us; it wouldn't work. I mean, you always have the option to hire the police for thousands of dollars to block off a street. That's not a permit they offered me. That's a permit that I would have had to spend 5 months and $5,000 getting. Oh, excuse me, it's my daughter.
Sure.
Oh, I'm talking to Robert right now. I'm talking to Robert, Lee. Maybe Mama could hide it. Maybe Mom will hide it.
This is one of the unsuspecting children that's as upset that you.
Yeah, she rides on the street all the time.
Okay, well, I wanted to make you go ahead.
Yeah, she's three. Any citizen who's wealthy or has large corporate sponsors can pay the police $6,000 to block off a street that we have the right to use every day. I mean, that's what the debate is do we have the right to use the street without paying the police $6,000? I mean, I maintain that we do.
Now, how many times has this happened in the past? I know it happens with Critical Mass and with the Midnight Mystery Ride and, what was it, Crank Ride you mentioned.
Right. It's about once a month or some kind of group ride. And notice that no one's ever been cited for unsafe behavior. I mean, if I've publicly asked the police chief to cite me for unsafe behavior so that we can go to court about it. You know, I mean, one time I was in a meeting with John Laird and a bunch of people, and I said, you know, let's make a date. Let's go out on mission and bring your ticket book, you know, and they won't do it because there's nothing unsafe or illegal about riding in the street. In fact, I think it's the safest way to ride. I'd love to have a debate with the police if they could actually show some attention to thinking about it. But there's nothing unsafe or illegal about it, and they won't ticket you for it. So this way of ticketing us for the unprevented event is just a sort of, you know, a Weasley way to try to ticket us for riding the street, which is perfectly legal according to the California Vehicle Code.
Give us what that vehicle code says, if you remember it.
So the vehicle code says it's CVC, California Vehicle Code 21202. It says that that if a road has a lot of turning motions, like Mission, where there's lots of parking lots and streets and whatever, or if the lane is a substandard width that a cyclist should use the road. So the standard width is 12 feet. The lanes on both Mission and King are 11 feet. So we clearly have the right to use the road. And you know, I think that when Captain Clark said we shouldn't ride down Mission, there was a lot that people had mixed feelings. I mean, I had mixed feelings too, because we absolutely have the right to ride down Mission, and sometimes it's important to ride a block or two on Mission, like to get to the bike store that's on Mission. But on the other hand, I also agree with a lot of public sentiment that bicyclists should stay off of Mission, you know, because it's never going to be a really good street to ride on. So we have that right, but you don't exercise a right just for the hell of it, just to get hurt. Now, King Street, on the other hand, like, that is the route. I mean, that's what the police are telling us, get off Mission, and then they tell us they don't want us to ride on King. I mean,
now, let me clarify for the audience. Mission Street is Highway 1 that goes out of town to the north. It goes past Subbing Restaurant, Cafe Brazil, McDonald's, Safeway.
Three bike stores.
And a number of bike stores. And King Street is one street above that toward the university.
Right. So
go ahead.
So the whole philosophy of the city staff when they tried to, the Mission Street Safety Task Force, which the police were nominally on but just goes through every meeting, was to create a safer route, you know, was to create a safe option for cyclists to ride the Mission Street corridor. Well, the safe option is King. And so then you have Captain Clark saying that we shouldn't ride the street on King. And we're asking for a facility on King, a bike boulevard or bike lanes, and we're fighting hard with the staff. They don't want to do a bike facility on King. So,
how much does it cost to do a bike lane?
It's a few hundred. There's different proposals, and they range between $100,000 and $300,000. So, which is nothing for a highway project. It doesn't come out of the city's general fund. The county as a whole, including the city, is receiving $11.5 million in federal monies for roads this year alone. It sounds like a lot to us because I don't have that and you don't either, but it's, you know, it's an insignificant amount for a project.
And how long have you been trying to get this bike lane on King Street?
Well, it's been in the city's general plan for 15 years. We were re-energized to work on the project after the two deaths on Mission, so it's been, what, a year, year and a half.
And I know that there's been a lot of troll, bigot, I call it that because it's how it certainly sounds to me. But if you want to be more neutral, say critic response, 38 critical comments, most of them critical, on the Sentinel website in this story. Oh, that Micah Posner, you know, he should team up with Robert Norris and get out of town, that sort of thing. Have you had much positive response to this front page story, or there was a prior story about this, right, that came out, that appeared in the paper?
Oh yeah, that was totally positive. Yeah, that was. I mean, I encourage people to look that up if you're wondering, like, well, what was this ride like? You know, the Sentinel was on the ride, and there was the pictures that were in the Sentinel yesterday, you know, of course, looked very positive, and they were. And then the article that went along with the pictures in November was super positive. And so, yeah, I mean, everyone, including the Sentinel, thought it was a great event. So I would really encourage people. This isn't really about bicycling. It's just about, you know, democracy and media. I would really encourage people not to read the comments on the Sentinel online. I've contacted the Sentinel about it. The comments are anonymous, so it's really an arena where people can, act out hate mail, exercise the libidos, threaten people, you know, because it's extremely hard to sue over that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm really one to foster free speech, but I think when you get to anonymous free speech, it becomes not so much of a useful thing. And the Sentinel themselves don't really, it's their big corporation that is maintaining that. I'm all for reading disagreeing opinions, and I read them in the paper version of the Sentinel. And I think there'll be some letters coming out, you know, for King Street bicycle improvements the next few days in the paper. There may be some letters coming out against it, but really reading comments on the website is really, it just sort of encourages people.
So in November, you held this ride, which had about 100 people. How many kids were involved?
Probably 20, 30.
And how long did it take?
Oh, like 45 minutes.
And I guess you're planning another ride on Sunday, right?
Well, there's a ride on Sunday that's Greenways to School is doing, which is a youth project of People Power, and they're just riding to Mission Hill with kids because it's Bike Week coming up, and they want to encourage kids and show them how to ride.
Now, is this kids only, or can older kids attend?
Oh yeah, older kids can attend too, especially if you have an interest in, you know, helping to keep kids safe, or you think of yourself as a safe experience.
Where does the ride start, and what time does it start?
Between Miramar and Berkshire on King.
Between Miramar, I've never heard of either of those streets. Clue us in.
No, it's west of Bay on King. If you just ride down King to the west of Bay.
So it's kind of
Miramar is the street that runs into the Safeway.
Okay, so it's between Miramar and Berkshire on King Street. And this is going to be at 3 p.m. on Sunday.
Yeah, there's a little celebration at 3. Some of the neighbors want to just show that, you know, they like having a human scale street and a fun street, so we're going to make bicycle powered smoothies and play basketball. I think there's a throne for mothers.
Now hold it. Have you gotten a permit to play basketball on the street? Aren't you concerned that children might be imperiled by flying balls?
Yeah, you know, people play basketball on the street all the time, obviously. So,
well, have you talked to Captain Clark about getting his permission before you go any further?
No, I haven't talked to Captain.
How about calling John Barisoni to make sure he won't issue you another ticket?
He's invited to come play basketball.
I see. Well, John, you know, he's not down how athletic he is, but he's sort of a wiry fellow. Maybe he'll get out there. So this is at 3 o'clock, and it's going to be between Miramar and Berkshire on King Street.
Uh-huh.
Do you have to have a bicycle to attend, or can you just, you know?
No, you don't have to have a bicycle to attend. You know, just have to care about, you know, having a quiet King Street for the neighbors. It's really their party, and Well, it's all of our parties, and that we want a quiet King Street to ride and for kids to ride to school on, and they want a quiet King Street, which they deserve to just live their lives on. So.
Now, just to show folks that you are the weenie that all of us militant, black-clothed anarchists know you to be, actually, I'm not really, I wouldn't necessarily include myself in that group or even so characterize people, but you were a little reluctant to even announce this on the air because we do have an anarchist convergence happening this weekend where there's going to be a lot of folks doing some workshops actually around the same area where your office of People Power is, right?
Yeah, down at the hub.
And I imagine some of those folks may want to show up there to either observe or possibly because they're bikers themselves who want to support the rights of people in the community to ride bikes. And because also, frankly, because of this rather serious official attack on you for holding what seems to be a pretty family-friendly event, which doesn't quite meet with Captain Clark's, didn't get his imprimatur, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the reason, you're right, we talked about this earlier, and I want to make sure that, you know, we keep, you know, the right tone about these things. We're asking for King Street to be, you know, a safe and pleasant facility for kids to ride and families to ride and anarchists to ride, everyone to ride, you know, and I don't, like, it's, the police are trying to bully me and bully cyclists, and I don't think the way you respond to bullies is by upping the ante. So I don't want to encourage any kind of confrontation with the police. I just want us to go about, like, recreating our city the way we want it, you know, and making it safer, making it more pleasant, making it more wonderful, and ignoring them as much as possible until they, you know, take some leadership and care about cyclists.
You know, I know that I was part of critical mass in San Francisco when the police attempted to seriously disrupt it.
Yeah, me too. That day when Willie Brown was on that platform. Was that the one you're talking about?
It could have been. It was in the late 90s, so it might have been that time. And so, I mean, so this is sort of a different kind of approach than we used up in San Francisco, which is essentially a form of aggressive defense in order to say, no, we're not going to let you take away our rights. Yes, we are going to defend the right to ride a bicycle on the street, even if that means, you know, slowing up the traffic a bit.
Well, no, it's not. It's the same approach. I mean, Critical Mass has gotten this militant reputation, but I was involved with some of the original architects of Critical Mass and went to a lot of the first rides. And the idea of Critical Mass was always, I mean, we called it a commute home. You know, it was always just taking our right, which we already have, to the street. But society is sort of forgetting, you know, that cyclists have the right to use the street. And, you know, like when Mayor Brown stood on top of some huge platform and said, "You will not ride Market," you know, our response was to say, "Go get a bike, Willie," and wave to him and ride by smiling. I mean, there's not, Critical Mass never tried to be confrontational with the police or anyone else. We're just using the street in the most efficient, safe manner possible. And when you have a ride of 100 people down King, that's the safest, most efficient use of that street in years. And the Sentinel got that when they did the article. So I don't, you know.
Will the Sentinel be covering this event on Sunday?
I don't know. That's not, I don't care.
Good for you. Good for you. I know that there was a special session of closed city council that discussed this ticket. You're facing, a $200-some fine here?
I went to that section. I went to that meeting with the city council, and I said, you know, on your behalf, Mr. Barrisoni is spending what? I mean, I don't know. He spent thousands of dollars by now trying to harass me about this. He's written letters to the court and all this stuff, and I don't know. Yeah, so anyways, and I said, I told them, look, if the staff feels like we weren't respectful in some way, I'm happy to sit down with the staff and try to mediate this issue. I mean, to be honest, I feel kind of bad for the special events person. She's like stuck in the middle of what's really a dispute about whether cyclists have the right to use the street. It's not really about a permit, you know. So I talked to city council people, and I said, why don't you, you know, tell the staff to call a meeting. We'll try to mediate this. We'll try to work it out. I've suggested several times to Mr. Barrisoni that, because I think it's important for me and everyone else to be respectful of staff and their work. You know, it's just, I don't, like I said, I don't think they abuse us to create a necessary controversy. This is about needing a safe place to ride along the Mission Street corridor. And if the police are trying to make it into something else, and it's not. It's really, what the police think is really immaterial. What we need is a safe and pleasant place to ride.
And so the point is not to be diverted from your agenda by some police agenda.
Well, no, because then they've won. You know, then they've made it into some power struggle with the police. I mean, that's not, you know, that's a waste of time.
So regarding this citation, though, Has it gone to trial yet? Is there a court date? Where is it at now?
It's just nowhere. You know, it's just a citation. There's no criminal charges. There's no public defender. There's no.
Well, it is a criminal charge. An infraction citation is a criminal charge. Okay. Have you been told to answer it within 30 days, or else it goes unattended? That sort of thing.
I'd rather not get into that, you know, on the air, because if it does turn into a case, then I'm going to need to.
You don't wish to make any incriminating statements, Michael?
Well, I don't want to, you know, reveal any kind of strategy I have to.
All right. Well, I expect that if you do have to go to trial, you'll let us know in time so we can all go and join the Sentinel critics in throwing tomatoes at you for destroying safety on King Street.
I hope the city decides to mediate it before it comes to that, because the idea of having a circus about, you know, a permit or not a permit is ridiculous. The city council is ultimately going to decide whether King Street is a safe facility or not. And in the meantime, the police should help us, you know, find a safe place to ride it and stop trying to harass us.
Well, perhaps Captain Clark will listen in and have a change of heart.
Yeah.
And perhaps Obama will withdraw all the troops from Afghanistan. All these things could happen. And perhaps, you know, I will be elected mayor in 2 weeks.
Well, in the meantime, we just have to keep working for, you know, keep helping the kids ride on the streets and keep working for a more safe society.
We'll probably see you at 3 o'clock on Sunday, because I may bring along a video camera just to catch some of those smiling faces.
Okay. Bring your bike.
How can people get some more information about how to ride safely and how to be supportive either, you know, of your objectives, or in case this does turn into a power struggle, how to help those who essentially want bikers to have some power in Santa Cruz?
I don't know about bikers having power. I think we just want a safe place to ride.
But, well, the power to be able to ride without police harassment, how's that?
Yeah, I guess that's true. So we have a website, peoplepowersc.org, and People Power's phone number is 831-425-0665. And we definitely need your help. People Power is a mostly volunteer organization. We don't get any government or corporate funding for obvious reasons. And we all need to stick together and work through this. And I also think it's important that, you know, keep stopping at stop signs and keep being respectful to drivers, because we're, you know.
And whatever you do, don't ride the wrong way on Pacific Avenue.
Yeah, I honestly don't think that's a good idea. I think it's like, we're asking for our rights, and so it behooves us to behave respectfully, you know, while we try to get them.
Micah, we've reached 8 o'clock. I want to thank you for taking time out, and I know that this is always an internal struggle for you, because you don't want to be too critical of the bureaucrats, because you are really trying to reach a common solution that acknowledges everybody's work and reaches a better scene for all of us and sort of circumvents these foolish power struggles. But sometimes they're forced upon you, and what do you know?
Yeah, that's how I feel. I mean, I did everything I could to stop a, you know, public confrontation with the police, but it seems like they're sort of determined to try to bully us, so we'll just sort of keep on riding.
Calling Captain Clark a bully. How could you be so abusive in your language about our police department? You know, this is the same Captain Clark who, when he took blankets from the homeless in 1990s.
I didn't call him a bully. I used bully as a verb, so I feel like the.
All right, then. I'm glad you didn't, because I certainly wouldn't want to call someone who takes blankets from homeless people a bully. Simply a person collecting evidence.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to thank you, Micah, for calling in, and I want to let people know again, www.peoplepowersc.org or 425-0665. There'll be a ride at 3 o'clock, a community children's biking ride.
I don't know if we'll leave right at 3 o'clock. I think we're going to hang out and have some smoothies and stuff. And we'll
you have to bring your own picnic goods, or can you scrounge off the people eating there?
Well, there's going to be bicycle-powered smoothies. We have a bike that is a blender, so we're going to make smoothies. You can give us a donation for them, or I think some of the neighbors are going to bring cookies. Actually, it'd be great if you came to the event, if you brought some baked goods to share with the neighbors. And bring
some food with you.
Yeah, the neighbors are inviting us in, so let's make sure that we honor what they want for their street, which from what I understand, they don't want to have the same.
That's going to be at King Street between Miramar and Berkshire at 3 o'clock on this Sunday.
Yeah.
All right. Well, may the tires be with you and the police be well attired, or something like that.
We always say, like, keep the rubber on the right side of the road.
And keep the rubber rumbling or whatever.
All right.
Thank you, Micah.
You're welcome.
And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Though there's no sign of the burly Uncle Dennis, I've got to say that this questionable individual is due on the scene at any moment. And it's time for me to be packing my bag and heading out of town, or at least heading out of the studio. So that's exactly kind of what I'm trying to do here. And in fact, oh no, it's not Uncle Dennis. It's one of his. It's a questionable cohort who hasn't been seen in the studio for some time. And she's a woman to be reckoned with. So I would like to thank you for being with me in this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I will be, I guess I'll be back on Sunday morning. There's a Human Rights Organization meeting Saturday at 3, so you might want to check that one out. And there's also a Know Your Rights Forum tomorrow at 10 at the Sub Rosa Cafe. And I guess even now, the Sub Rosa Cafe is having some pretty interesting shindigs. Have you been to that, George? Have you been by the Sub Rosa? Anything exciting happening there? Oh, well, there you are. Let me see. All right. She's been busy, and she's going to be busy doing a little Uncle Dennising here and giving you some cream and some dregs and the upcoming 60s, 70s. You heard it before, and now you're going to hear it again. I'm going to play a little bit of bye-bye music, and I hope if you want to get in touch, you'll give me a call, as usual, on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And then we'll talk some more and stuff like that. Thanks again.
All right, boys. Listen up to me again. I ain't going to have to tell you this another time. Unless you're going to go off and join the Teamsters, we got to get this train loaded up and out of here by 8:45 tonight or the dispatch have my ass.
There's a hobo getting on the train down there.
Are you shitting me? There's a hobo in my yard.
Yeah, let's go open up and get a whoop ass on him now.
Go on, get him, boys. Open up a whole six pack up on his ass. I'll have the hobos in my yard. You know that? This train is bound for glory, man. And ain't no room in glory for no freeload of hobos. No, sir.
Skidmark Bob.
Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, streaming online at freakradio.org. You were just hearing an old CD that's been in the station for quite some time. What, almost the entire life of the station? Well, maybe not. Pretty close, but... Well, anyway, we were just hearing... which one was that, Robert?
Hobo Train.
That was a pretty cool song. I enjoyed that. Thank you. Take care, Robert. See ya. And this is normally Uncle Dennis's time slot. He does a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. It's music of the 60s and 70s. And my name is George. I'm going to be sitting in tonight for Uncle Dennis. Nothing serious, just had some duties to attend to. But yeah, he'll be back next week in his time slot here, 8 to 11 Thursday nights. And I'm going to be doing a little bit of a different show than Uncle D does. He plays, as I said, a lot of music of the 60s and 70s, and primarily, rock music, I think. I don't know. I'm sorry, Dennis, if I'm getting it wrong here. But I don't know who's calling on the phone, folks, but I'm talking on the air here. If you could call back when I'm playing some music, that'd be great. Thank you. Robert's left the studio, so if you're calling for him, he's gone. So, tonight I'm going to be playing a lot of bluegrass and some folk music. I might get into some Latin music, and I might play some, 60s and 70s stuff. I have some Maggot Brain, and what else? I have some Cat Stevens. I have a few Fleetwood Mac, I have some stuff that might, kind of fit into Dennis's show a little bit. So, hang on a sec. Person doesn't listen, I guess. Hang on a moment. So, that's pirate radio for you folks. It's chaotic sometimes. Shows don't start on time always. And, it's a little bit crazy. But we're going to have fun tonight. I'm going to play a lot of really good music. So stay tuned. And I'll give out the number in a bit. So if you want to call in some requests, you'll have the opportunity. And we're going to keep some of Dennis's usual stuff. I'll be doing some environmental news. As well as... we'll be sampling some beverages tonight. Dennis usually does the microbrew beer, which is something I love, but I'm trying not to indulge too much in alcohol lately, so I'll be doing some kombucha, and we're going to have fun. So stay tuned, and right now we're going to start it off with a little bit of Thundering Banjos of Bluegrass. Thank you.